Well, I hope I don't embarrass one of our teens by introducing the sermon this morning, probably too late, or this afternoon. But in talking with Mr. Cody Harris, who works at, it's Freddy's Hamburger chain, I believe, is that correct? He was working one day and he noticed that one of his coworkers was being pulled out of the window, in the drive-through window, and that basically the car that had pulled up was trying to kidnap the cashier or the employee. So he ran over and grabbed her leg, and the other and a manager ran as well, and they were both pulling her back in the window, were able to do so. They managed to get the girl back in, and they called the cops, but no arrests had been made at this point. So I guess we have kind of a local small town hero here. But I just, I knew that would embarrass him, I'm sorry. But anyways, you know, just things like that, it's very shocking to hear, but it's the world that we're living in today. As we draw closer to the return of Jesus Christ, it is easy to see that we are living in perilous times and that we are going to continue to live in perilous times. And it's not just something that the ministry or the leadership in the church will have to consider, as the ministerial conference is about perilous times and leading in perilous times, but it is something we all must consider, or the perilous times that we're living in. And the thought of being protected by God in seemingly just a very distraught world, but I believe that the thought of being protected is more and more in the forefront of our minds. And not only do we need help from God to protect us physically, but a part of that protection that we need is a spiritual aspect. The guarding of our thoughts and minds, because it is getting more and more difficult just to even process what is being thrown at us. We do need God to guard and protect our hearts and minds. A few years ago at the Feast of Tabernacles, a member shared with me that they were very fearful of the events to come, knowing that it could be in their lifetime that the Great Tribulation and the end times events that will precede, the prophetic events, and it made them afraid. And at the feast, I mean, they had been praying about it quite a bit, but particularly one day. And what was interesting is that the next day, after much prayer about this and wanting to have the right attitude and not wanting to be fearful, but the next day, not only the sermonette, but the sermon and sermonette were both about not being afraid and not being fearful. And it felt like, for this individual, an answered prayer on kind of how to process things as we move forward. And it is so very true. The Olivet Discourse, Jesus' prophecy found in Matthew 24, it's one of the most extensive explanations on what is to come prior to his return. And he reviews many things that are troubling: religious deceptions, wars, famines, pestilences, earthquakes, and even says that they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Troubling times indeed. However, we are told to not be troubled. Don't be fearful. And in thinking about not being troubled in the midst of troubling times, I thought it would be good for us to look at God's willingness to protect his people. I believe that in doing so, it will help to bring about a certain amount of comfort, maybe the right perspective, and allow us to be thankful that we serve such an awesome God. Part of having a proper fear for our great Creator and a proper reverence for God is to realize just how powerful he is and his willingness to protect his people. I don't believe that he wants us to be afraid, because that's what his word tells us. So God's love and faithfulness to his people is unmatched. We cannot fathom the love that he has for his people. And part of the love that he shows to his children is through that protection that he provides. The church of God has faced various trouble in the past. That's a part of the church's history. There has been natural events that have affected the church of God, but yet God has rescued the church time and time again. There's an article from Julia Scott entitled, "Did the Jerusalem Christians Flee to Pella?" This article reviews different historians that basically detail the same event, dealing with a Sabbath-keeping group of Christians in Jerusalem, and is taking place right before the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans in 70 AD. The Jerusalem Christians were able to flee to Pella and escape the wrath of the Romans because they were forewarned. And the different historians, Eusebius and I always have trouble with the second one, Epiphanius, they both detail the same thing and they recount the same events. But Pella was a site on the other side of the Jordan River, rugged hills of Jordan, 3 miles outside of Jordan, and about 17 miles south of the Sea of Galilee. And they were forewarned by an oracle, and to both accounts, one says they were forewarned by an angel, and they were convinced and convicted that they were to flee and that they were to leave. And they did, and because they did that, they were protected. One excerpt from his article says, "The first clear reference of this event, leaving to go to Pella, came from the 4th century historian Eusebius. He says that as the Romans approached the city, the people belonging to the church at Jerusalem had been ordered by oracle, or forewarning, and the forewarning was revealed to approved men on the spot before war broke out, and to leave the city and dwell in the town of Pella. The destruction of the city, Eusebius says, came only after the Jerusalem Christians had made their escape." Then Julius Scott provides a similar account from a different historian. So there's a little bit of consistency as well. But Epiphanius from Salamis gives the same account as Eusebius, and he gives the account that all disciples were warned by an angel about Jerusalem being doomed to destruction. Two historians verifying the same thing. And there are other proofs, relics, ancient artifacts that also seem to verify the same thing, that this Sabbath-keeping Jerusalem Christians, you know, that they did make their way to Pella, and that was where they ended up going to. By both accounts, they were seemingly convinced and convicted that this way and that that warning was in fact a warning from God. And as a result, they were spared and protected. They believed that it was a valid decree. And they trusted in what they were being told, and they understood that it was a warning from God. And what is also interesting is that it was perfect timing, if what they say is true. Prior to fleeing to Pella, it was the absolute right time. If they would have left sooner to go to Pella, there was a rebel Jews who took over Pella, and they probably would have died in that. However, the timing of it all was absolute perfect timing. In Adolf Harnack's book, The Mission and Expansion of Christianity, he explains that if the Jerusalem Christians left Jerusalem earlier, for example, 62 AD, and left to Pella, they would have been in very bad straits, because in 66 AD, those Jewish rebels came and destroyed Pella. Anyone would have been living there in that time would have suffered major consequences. So they left at the right time, and otherwise their lives would have been in jeopardy. There's also further proof that the migration happened based on information from the sect of the Nazarenes. And there's a quote from the sect of the Nazarenes, and said that at the time that this was being written, they said that the sect of the Nazarenes existed in Pella, and existed after the migration of the Jerusalem Christians, leaving before an impending siege. So more proof that they did in fact, move into that area. So there is additional proof from many different historians' accounts. But could you imagine leaders giving a forewarning from an angel that they needed to leave the city and go back to their homes and leave basically with what was on their back, and then to walk and make that trek to Pella, not knowing where they were going to live, but God provided. Another example in church history is found in England. England in the 1600s, or in the mid-1600s, Christians were being heavily persecuted. And one particular group, they were a Sabbath-keeping group, and they were being heavily persecuted from the government of England. And in 1646, apparently there were 7 Sabbath-keeping churches in London, and they called themselves the Poor and Despised Church of God. The Poor and Despised Church of God. 16 years later, John James, one of the ministers, was killed for his belief. He was a Sabbath keeper, and the persecution, again, was very high at that time. They were Sabbath keepers, but that did not thwart the church. God's church continued to go on, continued to proceed. In 1677, Francis Benefield spoke of the church and said that even after all they had faced prior, there were 2 Sabbath-keeping churches in London, and at least 3 of the 7 had survived the persecution and continued on as the Poor and Despised Churches of God. We know that God is not going to forsake the church. The church will continue to go on despite the plots of men. And these wicked plots for men, really, they can be attributed to Satan and the demons. But God is more powerful than that. The church will go on. The church will prevail despite the plots of man. Psalm 31 and verse 19. Psalm 31 and starting in verse 19. Oh, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you in the presence of the sons of men. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of man. They'll be hid, they'll be protected from the plots of man. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. God has delivered his people time and time again from the wicked and the deceitful plots of man. Over and over again, Christ, who is the head of the church, has fought for his people. He has rescued his people from the plots of men and ultimately from Satan's attacks. Exodus 14 and verse 18, we see a very detailed example. Exodus 14 and verse 18, here we have Pharaoh's army. You could probably say Satan's army, his minions. They were being heavily influenced by an evil realm at this time and just could not let it go. We know that God allowed his heart to be hardened, but they were going to pursue them to the very end. God had delivered them, but he was going to fully deliver them. Exodus 14 and starting in verse 18. Exodus 14 and starting in verse 18, then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. So it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that the one did not come near the other all that night. So in very clear contrast, you have protection in the light, and you have darkness, which could represent judgment. And what a very graphically depicted scenario. The judgment on those pursuing the Israelites did come to fruition, and you had light for the Israelites and darkness for the Egyptians. What an incredible visual that would be if you could step back and see that. Verse 23, "And the Egyptians pursued and went after them in the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. And he took off their chariot wheels, so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, 'Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians.'" Some were saying, this doesn't seem to be a very good idea. Now, you would think that after the first 10 plagues, too, that would have also been indication. And then now their wheels are taken off. They're thinking, do you really want to go through the Red Sea? We have some trouble. We're not exactly functioning on all cylinders. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing over it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. An incredible story of God's protection. And God planned to protect them even into the promised land, up to the very end of that promised land where they could have inherited. It was God's plan and his full intentions to continue to protect them into the promised land. Exodus 23 and verse 20. We know that they basically refused to go in. They refused to acknowledge what God was leading them to. But his plans are very clear. Exodus 23 and verse 20. "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods nor serve them nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars." God was going to protect them and bless them all the way and into the promised land. In Revelation 3, you won't turn here, but we can read about the one of the seven churches, the sixth church mentioned, the faithful church. It's described as a small flock. It's described as one of little strength, and it's described as a church at the end of the age, ushering in and close, right on the cusp of Christ's return and being able to inherit the kingdom of God. They will be there at that time. And it says that God will keep them from the hour of trial that will affect the whole world if they remain faithful and endure and obey to the end. Another example of being rescued from the plots of men, we can turn to Daniel 6 and verse 18. You know, God, he can rescue any way he chooses to. He can deliver in any way he desires, but sometimes he does do it through his holy angels. Daniel 6 and verse 18. Daniel certainly faced the plots of man. Satan was behind that attack, and it seemed like almost a foolproof plot. They had involved a plot that not only trapped Daniel, but it trapped his ally, the king, and his friend, in his own words, in his own decree, in his own laws that he set up. They trapped them both, and so this seemed to be a foolproof case. Daniel 6 and verse 18. "Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. We know that he was distraught. He did not want Daniel to go into the lion's den. He thought a lot of him. He had favor with him. Daniel had favor in his eyes, and no musicians were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. Then the king rose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve, continually been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." God delivered him. He protected him from the wicked plots of men. We no doubt think about Mordecai and Haman, and the gallows were set for Mordecai. But how quickly that turned, and Haman was hung on the gallows, what he had prepared for Mordecai. That plot was totally destroyed and flipped. And then there is the example of the Apostle Peter, who was imprisoned and wrongfully imprisoned, persecuted, and he was released from prison by angels. And at the time, he did not know, is this a vision? What is going on here? Is this real? And you can imagine being asleep or being woken up, say, "Let's get out of here. Come on. Well, who are you? I'm an angel." Okay. Or is this true? What is going on? And he was released. God thwarts the plots of man. And God can rescue us in any way he chooses to. But again, sometimes he does decide to do it through his holy angels. Psalm 31 in verse 1. King David understood that sometimes that protection can come from God or from his angels. And part of that asking for protection was in his holy angels to fight his battles for us, for him. Psalm 35 in verse 1. "Plead my cause, O Lord, with those who strive with me." Psalm 35 in verse 1. "Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler and stand up for my help. Also draw out the spear and stop those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. Let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor who seek after my life. Let those be turned back and brought to confusion who plot my hurt. Let them be like chaff before the wind, and let the angel of the Lord chase them. Let their way be dark and slippery. Let the angel of the Lord pursue them. For without cause they have hidden their net for me in a pit, which they have dug without cause for my life. Let destruction come upon him unexpectedly, and let his net that he has hidden catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall." This is a part of a prayer, a psalm of David, looking for angelic protection from God, rescuing, being rescued. I knew one church member who struggled with health and some physical limitations in Kentucky, and he would do the best he could and get around. But one situation, he was by himself, and he was in an alleyway, and he was mugged by two young adults. And they pulled a knife on him, they took his wallet, and they said, "We're going to kill you." And that was the next step. And then, out of the blue, two very large men, or you could see them through the alleyway, and they were right there, yelled at the other two individuals and said, "Stop. Stop what you're doing." They stopped, and they ran off. And, of course, he was shook up, but he was still looking for the two men to thank them, but they were nowhere to be found, quickly gone. Well, where was that? Was that angelic protection? And I will say that individual, through his limitations, he did a lot to try to spread God's word. He went around almost every place in Paducah, Kentucky, and he would, this is with the Good Works program or dropping off magazines, he got magazines and almost every store, every shop. And you would go, you would see the little stand, free literature. And he did that as basically like a full-time job. But it was interesting how God provided for him in that way. Psalm 91 and verse 1. Psalm 91 and verse 1. This whole chapter is about protection that God offers his people. But notice there are some details as well in how he protects. Psalm 91, starting in verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. Surely He will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. That's an interesting scripture, that there is angelic protection that we should consider as well. Now, by understanding, God can give us angelic protection in the face of famine, pestilence, in dangerous times, he can give us protection over angels. This, however, does not give us license to not use wisdom or to just kind of live life in a very lackadaisical way where we don't also consider what is dangerous and not. Well, God will protect me, his angels will provide. It's very interesting. The same verse is quoted by Satan the devil in tempting Christ, or in basically saying, jump off from this high pinnacle. Do something very foolish that could cause you harm. Because after all, he says, he shall give his angels charge over you and keep you. He uses that same scripture. And Christ said, you do not tempt the Lord your God. We don't want to tempt God with our actions, but we don't want to be fearful either. There's a right balance. We don't want to live life in a way where we're foolish and we just throw caution in the wind every chance we get. I don't care, the angels will protect me. We don't want to live life in that way, but we also don't want to live life in fear. We put our trust in Him, and we want to have the right balance. It also does not mean that by taking precautionary measures to prevent the spread of illness or self-quarantining when sick is a lack of faith. These are biblical principles. Our faith is in God, and we don't tempt God by throwing caution in the wind. Faith is one thing, and we have to have faith. We have to persevere to the very end. We also want to be wise in what we do. We don't get on icy roads, roads that are inch thick of ice. Well, I guess Mr. Sargent would say you do, because he was from Montana, and he said ice doesn't bother him. So maybe for some, that's okay. But typically, we wouldn't get on icy roads and say, well, I'm going to church, hell or high water, and I'm going to be there because I have faith. Well, that's really not the right approach. Doing something that is notably dangerous because we say, well, God's angels will protect me, that's really not the right approach either. But I will say, just from a personal, we get a lot of snow in Wichita. That is one of the hardest decisions for me, not being in Wichita, and then do we have to cancel or not? And it seems like no matter what, if you cancel, then the sun comes out and everything's great and the roads are fine. And then you say, no, I'm not going to, fool me once, weather. You're not going to do it again. We're going to have it. And then it's the worst conditions ever, But Through it all, though, we do look to God's protection. We do the best we can. We try to make the best judgments, and we do look to God for his protection and safety. Nevertheless, how many times, we live our life, we try to make the right judgments, we do the best we can, but how many times have we been in a dangerous situation where God has protected us and we didn't realize to what extent? Maybe we didn't realize how dangerous it was becoming. I remember, as a young adult, I had to make it to the Winter Family Weekend in Louisville or Cincinnati, wherever it was at that time. And I had to be around my friends, and a little weather was not going to deter me. Well, there was one year, and there's been a couple years where just very bad ice storms. But, it was okay starting out in Kentucky, and got on there 45 minutes, and it started getting bad. It's like, nope, I'm pushing through, got to be there, got to be at the Winter Family Weekend. And it was probably the worst ice storm to come through that area. There was just a sheet of ice, and it was thick. It was maybe half inch thick, maybe more than that. But I remember driving, and that drive turned stressful real quick. And white knuckles on the steering wheel, and have the window down because the windshield wiper blades were getting full of ice on them, so you'd have to reach around and kind of try to knock it off because you couldn't pull over. If you pulled over, you were not going to get back on the roads. As we were driving, they were shutting down roads behind us, and I remember one vehicle that tried to pass me. Here I'm just flying down the road, probably 15, 20 miles an hour, and he's like, I'm going to kind of creep by you, go a full whopping 30 miles an hour. And he just drifted off, and I believe he actually hit the cop car. They had cop cars in the median just watching, but I've never witnessed just one car after the next just going off. And we made it there safely, but we were very thankful. We were praying, very stressful, and despite a foolish attempt to get there, that meant more. I do believe that God was helping us and protecting us because in so many different ways, it could have gone bad. Katie, we hadn't met at that time, but she also faced a similar situation. Maybe God just didn't want us to meet at that point. He was trying to, not yet, but a different situation, same set of roads. She was driving, very afraid as well. But with her, they ended up starting to drift off into an embankment, actually a snowy embankment, and she felt the car, lost control, and those in the car basically started praying out loud, and she said it went from going off to going upright. And I don't think it was because of the traction from the little Chevy Cavalier that had these great, great road tires and got back on track. So We always need God's protection. We look for his protection, and we really don't fully comprehend how God is protecting us behind the scenes. You think about a parent and a child relationship, a grandparent. Sometimes mom and dad will foresee danger and steer a child in a certain way without them really even knowing what they're doing behind the scenes to help protect or provide. They kind of go about their business, and yet mom and dad are behind the scenes, grandma, grandpa, they are actively protecting their children, grandchildren. Driving back from Colorado, I honestly don't even know how this happened, but we were approaching Topeka, Kansas, and really we're right about to get in the heart of it. And I'm driving along, and then I notice we're off on two lanes. We were on major interstate. And I don't even know how we got on the two lanes, but I looked down and I'm like, well, it looks like we gained 5 minutes. Well, how in the world did we get on these two lanes? We're like going around Topeka, and we're basically, well, we'll just stay the path. We'll just go that way, and stayed on. It took a really odd way home to Lewisburg, but about 45 minutes outside of Topeka, I get a call from John Maskrid, and he says, are you guys okay? And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, about 45 minutes ago, there was a really bad wreck in Topeka, and it would be right on the way that you're coming back. I said, that's interesting. I'm on two lanes, totally avoided that particular route. I said, I don't even know how I got here on this two-lane section. It makes you wonder. It makes us think, was that just coincidence? But we look to God for help. But how many times has, even with us, without us even realizing it, has He protected us? And we need that protection. There are even, multiple stories where people driving, and one was shared at the feast this past year in Branson, and then there's been others, and Mr. Sargent talking with him, he shared a very similar story as well, where basically they were either about to T-bone a semi, it had pulled out, and there was no time to react, but they came to a point where they basically just put their hands over their eyes, and they didn't know what to do. And then all of a sudden they were expecting impact, but instead they looked back and they made it on the other side of the semi, and it defied physics. And there was two or three different situations from different individuals where they experienced the same thing. They're supposed to make that impact, but then they look back and they're like, that was an absolute miracle. So there are times where sometimes we don't know, and then sometimes we know too. That just doesn't make sense. It defies physics. How many times has one of God's angels been there to help us, even though we did not see it? 2 Kings 6 and verse 14. It's a fascinating example. It kind of helps us see a little bit of the other side, the angelic realm, and maybe the protection that is offered to us, even though we don't really understand. But here the king of Syria, he's angry with Elijah, and he found out where he was, and he said, I'm sending chariots, horses, surrounding the city where he's at. And what is Elijah to do? His servant is thinking the same thing. What in the world are we going to do now? 2 Kings 6 and verse 14. Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, Alas, my master, what shall we do? And he answered, Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. He's probably thinking, I don't quite understand your logic. I don't get it. Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. There was more. There was an angelic realm. They weren't doomed. The angels fight for God's people, even though they are invisible. They rescue us at times. Another driving incident growing up too, when I was a young adult, and I was driving with a buddy. We were about to go play sand volleyball, and he thought we needed to stop and get some refreshments at a gas station first, get some Gatorade. And he kept saying, go on. I was like, no, we're late. And he kept pointing to the gas station. And this is a two-lane road in between Monkey's Eyebrow and Possum Trot. And that is no lie. And at that particular gas station, actually, you can get a shirt that says, you are here in between Possum Trot, Monkey's Eyebrow. And that is the name of the two little towns. But anyways, so we're in between that area and Tulane, and after I looked at the gas station and looked back, there was a car that had been stopped for a while, about to rear end it. I had to, swing over to the right, and there was no median though. Nothing on the side that I could really go to. And all there was were driveway embankment, like 10, 15 foot embankment, driveway embankment. And so as I turned to the right, I had to just turn the wheel really hard, and we were going fast. So 180 degree turn, but wouldn't you know it, we stopped right, It slid, turned, stopped right in the middle of a driveway. And if we would have went any further, we probably would have rolled down the embankment, but we stopped. And that one kind of defied physics as well. Now, we need God's protection, and sometimes we don't realize to what extent He's actually protecting us, but we certainly do. Our children need God's protection. The blessing of the little children, it's not just something that we do by tradition. It has no meaning. We certainly pray for God's protection, His blessing. We need that. And we need His holy angels. There's one story of a little girl who lived her childhood years in Canada. Well, I'll just say this is Katie's mother. She lived, grew up in Canada. And she had to walk a mile through the woods on a deserted road to get to school. And this was normal for her even at the age of 8. But they had been recently warned of a very evil criminal that was on the loose that had, there had been some victims and he was targeting children. And there was a warning that had been put out. They still had not found this criminal. And here she had to walk to school every day. And one particular day she was walking close to the woods and here comes a blue car, it passed her, and then it turned around, and then went towards her slowly, and then it went back the other way towards her again slowly, and she was afraid. She was very fearful for what was going to happen next. She was alone, there was nobody there, but then a lady with a long dress came out of the woods, and she walked in front of her, and she said, "Follow me," or she led her back to the house, and that car, when the lady came out, the car drove away. Well, that lady didn't say much. She just followed her, or allowed her to follow her back to the house. And then she walked around a shed there after she made it to the house. And then when she looked for her, she was gone. So, very interesting indeed. But with all of that said, the angelic protection, the means that He provides protection, who is behind the protection ultimately? Of course, it is God Himself and God alone. Even though He uses protection from others as angels, it is certainly God that is protecting. Psalm 4 and verse 6. Psalm 4 and verse 6. There are many who say, "Who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of Your countenance upon us. You have put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their grain and wine increased. I will both lie down in peace and sleep, for You alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." You alone. We do not create for ourselves true peace and safety. We can't. Well, if I just do this, and this more, then I will be safe. It doesn't work like that. What about national security? If I just come up with the best weapon possible, we'll be protected. Well, weapons have increased, and we have more powerful weapons, and we maybe can protect our borders a little more, but does that mean we're safe? We have how many cyber attacks that go on? It's constant that they have to constantly try to protect our nation. Probably so much that many cannot rest at night and sleep, that we cannot create our own safety. We cannot do that. Only God provides us that rest and that sleep. And that's because He never sleeps. He never slumbers. He is who we look to. Psalm 121 and verse 1. We need the protection that comes from God. Psalm 121 and verse 1. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. We have to keep things into perspective, and there has to be a proper fear and reverence for God and His infinite power and might. And you start looking into the vast universe and you start comparing our sun and how big it is, and then these very large super planets, basically, and then these very large stars, and you that can fit, you know, however many million of Earth within the radius of this star, and you start to comprehend things a little differently. You start to see God in a little different way. But the thing that gets me is where you say, you know, okay, there's these super stars, and you know, there you can fit however many tiny Earths within these stars. And then with those super stars are within this galaxy. And so there might be a million of those, a few billion. And then you think, well, that's a galaxy. And then you think, well, there's a billion, trillion different galaxies. That's where, you know, your mind just, we can't comprehend it. It just trails off. You know, His greatness is beyond our comprehension. We look to Him, the one who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper, the Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forever. We have to keep things into perspective, especially as this world grows hotter and hotter until the return of Jesus Christ. We know it's going to continue to grow hotter. And what will we see prior to the return of Jesus Christ? The story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they stood firm. They would not worship false gods. And their life was at risk. But you think about that furnace. How many times hotter did it get? 7 times. You know, it's going to get hot. There's going to be those trumpet blasts as well. There's going to be those 7 plagues. The day of the Lord. But you think that the great tribulation will be that time where things are extremely hot. But what is interesting is that those on the outside, they died. It was so hot. 7 times hotter. But yet, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were protected. How hot is it going to get before the return of Jesus Christ? We do need His protection. And no matter what, He can provide that protection. 1 year at the feast, a story was shared at the Lake of the Ozarks. The announcement was made about miraculous protection for one man who was working apparently for a steel company, but it had boiling molten steel in a large vat, and it poured out on the top of that individual right before the feast. Not a burn on that individual. He was there at the feast. That was announced. So a miracle. If God wants to protect, He will protect, no matter how hot it gets. So we look to God for the protection. We put our faith in Him. We put our trust in Him. You know, we do live in dangerous times. We want to do the very best that we can do, but ultimately we must put our trust in God. We don't want to have a lackluster approach with no care in the world, but we want to have the right balance. So what should we do in the meantime? And I'd like to conclude with 5 very short points. This will go very quickly as we conclude. But what is our responsibility? We know that God ultimately protects, but what's our part? And what should we remember in the meantime? And the first 2 points, I'll just combine them. Remain humble and fear God. Remain humble and fear God. Psalm 34 and verse 6. Our self-righteousness will not bring us out of danger or harm's way. We must look to God, we must remain humble, and we must fear God. There must be that proper reverence for His omnipotence, His power that is vastly greater than ours, so much that we cannot comprehend. Psalm 34 and verse 6. The poor man cries out, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his trouble. The angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him and delivers them. Fear God. Recognize His greatness. Drop down to verse 18. Remain humble. Fear God. Verse 18. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart and saves such as have a contrite spirit. Point number two, obey God. Obey God. Righteous actions matter. Strive for obedience. Obey God. Psalm 34 and verse 15. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. Psalm 34, verse 15. And his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. Deliverance to the righteous, to the obedient. We must stir up God's Spirit so that we can overcome in this life. Point number four, be thankful. Be thankful. Now, part of the protection that we need in this life is not only that physical protection, but also that spiritual protection, the guarding of our minds, the guarding of our heart and our mind. We wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with an evil realm. And there are certain thoughts we cannot cling to. We must guard our thoughts and our minds. Philippians 4 and verse 6. Philippians 4 and verse 6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. That is protection. That is a type of protection that we can receive in this life, a guarding of our hearts and minds. And point number five, stay in the sheepfold. Stay close to the Good Shepherd. Psalm 23, stay in the sheepfold. We look to God for the help, and we want to stay close to Him. We draw close to Him. We have the opportunity to worship our great Creator each and every week. We want to stay in the sheepfold. Psalm 23. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. There are many blessings that come from our shepherd. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it can be turbulent times, it can be troublesome times, it can be perilous times. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. There is comfort to be received through that rod and the staff. His angels are part of him, his extension of his rod and that protection. But we look to him. We want to be in his fold. We want to be under his umbrella. We want to be close to the Good Shepherd. In John 10, we're told that those who do not believe Christ and his teachings are not his sheep. Christ also said, "You are not my sheep because my sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me." They follow him. In all that we do, we want to strive to do our part in the meekness of wisdom while also putting our faith and trust in our great Creator God. We don't tempt God. We don't judge one another. But we are to strive to be wise with our personal actions while looking to God and putting our faith in God. I'd like to conclude by reading two paragraphs that was in the most recent member letter that came out on Thursday from our president, Mr. Jim Franks. He says in 1 Corinthians 2, 4 through 5, Paul writes and says, "And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." Christ gave similar advice to his disciples in the Gospel of Mark. So Jesus answered and said to them, "Have faith in God." And I might interject, that does not mean it's not saying we have faith in the wisdom of this world. There are many in the world that are proclaiming, this is what faith is if you do this. And there's many that are saying, this is what faith is if you do this. And it's really a part of a overall political battle in our nation. Mr. Franks goes on to say, there's nothing new to these two sections of scriptures. They simply are reminders that the focus of our faith must be on God and not man. In this regard, Paul cautioned us not to judge the faith of others. Who are you to judge another's servant? To his own master he stands or falls, Romans 14 and verse 4. To be clear, when we take the physical steps to reduce our risk of illness or to reduce the risk to others, it is not a lack of faith. In spite of the ongoing pandemic, our goal is to do all we can reasonably can to be together with the children of God, our fellow saints, all the while acknowledging the only complete source of protection and safety is Almighty God. Remember Psalm 4 and verse 6 through 8. In peace I will lie down and sleep, for you alone make me dwell in safety.